It's my pleasure to be able to introduce the next part of our program, and we have some short talks by three wonderful speakers. Our first speaker this morning is Birinda Bhattacharya. Now, Birinda has been the National Director in the TOS in India for 9 years, which is quite a long stint. It's wonderful. And he spends many months crisscrossing India, and they have over 100 TOS groups there. So I'm not sure how he manages, but he also manages to get a lot of TS work done as well. So that's fantastic. Birinda was born in Bangladesh, and he takes a personal interest in the development of the TS and the TOS. And he does as much as he can around the development in Bangladesh as well. So I'd like you to please give a warm welcome to Birinda.
Namaste. Good morning to you, brothers and sisters. We had 7 joyful days here at Olcott. It is a wonderful experience. We have listened illuminating talks, valuable presentation of the TOS world going around the world. And I am delighted to see that TS and TOS are working together most successfully in America. I got an invitation from my old friend, Dinah, whom I loved very much. But I told her that I wouldn't go. Later on, I got an invitation in writing from Tim Boyd, whom I saw at IDR as a wonderful personality. I determined I will go. But there was a hesitation in my mind. Getting the American visa is the problem. I applied for the visa, went to the American Council, and have an interview with a dynamic American lady, just like Nancy, with the bright eyes. She asked me, why you want to go to America? I told her, I have got an invitation from the American president of the Theosophical Society. She asked me, what is that? I told her it is a special organization. She told, yes, go. I thought there was a many application was turned up. I thought my application has also been turned up. She told me, gentlemen, don't worry, you'll get within 24 hours. You'll wonder I got the visa to my home within 24 hours, which made me to come here to enjoy, to experience the unique activities of the America. I go back with the experience, and I must thank Dinah and mostly to Brother John Boyd for this. Before I go to the talk, the subject, secretariat, service as a secretariat level, let me tell you a few words, how I was inspired in the service by my mother, a holy woman, a noble woman, without any moral education, without any formal education. We are living in a place during Second World War. It was a 3 kilometers distance from the British army camp. One morning, dozen of the Japanese Air Force was bombing heavily. We are under the tents as usual. In the battle went for 5 minutes. In the process, a man was wounded near the tank, was crying. My mother came out, started nursing the man, arranged to take him to the medical college through Red Cross. I got the message of the courage required for the service. It was during 1942, artificial crisis was created in India. Millions of people died for the want of food. I saw my mother to sharing her food meal many days. Remained fasting, told us to share our food with those who are hungry. This is the lesson of sacrifice which is required for the service. It is the case of 1944, when I was a student, I did not know what is caste and kiss and difference. I had got three friends, one Muslim, one lower caste. At that time, lower caste and Muslim were not allowed in the house of the upper caste Brahmin. I came home and asked my mother, "Oh, my mother, we are hungry, give us food." My mother served food to us, washed our dishes. The village society took objection to it, including the priest. My mother told, "I've done the duty of a mother. I have done no wrong." I understood the superstition and caste system is a curse to our society. In 1946, there was a heavy riot in East Bengal. Thousands of people were killed, particularly Hindus. I was allowed to come to Calcutta with the help of my old friends, Muslim friends. My mother did not leave the country, leaving his other villagers. My old Muslim friend protected her. My mother died in 1965. I was in the program of her funeral, saw hundreds of Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus paying their homage, remaining with folded hands, tears in their eyes. I got the lesson, love is the highest virtue. I started reading some books of Upanishad, got two common messages for the seeker of the truth. First message says, "Sinnanta Vishyam Ritasya Putra, listen, you are the children of God, you are immortal, you don't know for your ignorance." The second message says, "You can't reach truth by reading hundreds of books, listening thousands of lectures, or either by your intellect." I was thinking, how to reach the truth? I got Lord Krishna in Gita telling, "O Arjuna, you have to do your duty without any expectation." I got service without expectation is the TOS. I read the life of Annie Besant and Blavatsky, who inspired me to join the Theosophical Society and work for it. I retired in 1993, got an offer with a consultancy. I rejected it. Instead, I could donate 50% of my retirement benefit for the construction of an innovation hall in one of our orphanages to construct a building in our TUS school, to donate some money for legacy fund. This is my mother's spirit, who has inspired me to do and to work as a full-time worker for the Theosophical Society. Service in the ordinary sense, brothers and sisters, means to do a duty, one's duty in exchange of remuneration. We all, in some part of our life, we had to serve to earn our livelihood. But service in the context of the TS and TUS is something else. It to serve to the poor, to remove the suffering of others, to serve with love and compassion, to serve with the benevolence and with without any expectation. This is the service with the spirituality. Sacred labor means service without expectation. Sacred labor creates positive karma. The law of karma states that as you sow, so must you reap. Whatever action we take creates a reaction of which we are a part. So we must constantly be aware of whether our action we take is the correct action. In the book At the Feet of the Master, Krishnamurti writes, between right and wrong, it should not be difficult to choose. For those who wish to follow the Master have already decided to take the right at all cost. This means that we are willing to choose the path which may be more difficult to live, but in the end, it serves more people. It is the choice that put our attention outside ourselves. As a pilgrim, in 1893, Annie Besant believed she had found the land of the great masters and felt she could learn something from the people of the country. But what she learned was very difficult from what she expected. She noticed that Indians had forgotten their old culture and tradition. Instead, they were sacrificing animal and donating money and ornament to the temple for the better life. Who were ignoring the people who were poor and sick. Cruelty and superstition were abundant, such as the untouchability and sati, this bright burning. Annie Besant was instrumental in changing many of these beliefs. She encouraged the Indian to rule their own country. Annie Besant realized that we cannot change wrong without right action. We must act, but we must be aware of how those actions will affect others. Are we doing the action for ourselves or for those who are suffering? Sometime 8 years back, there was an unprecedented flood in West Bengal, which took life of the many people and the animals. I rushed to the place with my TOS team and with some raw materials and was shocked to see the people were standing under the trees without any food. I could save about $3,000 in order to go to Rome to attend the World Congress of the Theosophical Society. I was thinking what I should do. The discrimination at the feet of the Master, you should not forget, even at the last point of our life. I decided, I got an inner call, you do something for the people. Immediately I ordered to build a two building in two places for the, as a shelter house. I got first donation for our international president equivalent to $1,000. Donation came from Brother Bhikes and Australian section. I did not ask back any donation, but people gave me money. Two places has converted into schools, and 200 people are getting benefit of study in this school. Swami Vivekananda, who came to Chicago to attend the World Conference of the Religion, traveled to different parts of the India with the same message of Annie Besant, worship living God. As we see, the work of sacrifice can be sacred with no work of the sacrifice can be sacred without love. The message at the feet of the master states that will, wisdom, and love are the three aspects of logos. If we wish to do the master's work, we must do it through love. We all need love. The whole creation is held together by the bonds of divine love and compassion. In SPB's Voice of Silent, she asks, "Canst thou destroy divine compassion? Compassion is no attribute. It is the laws of the laws, eternal harmony, a soulless universal essence, the light of everlasting right, the fitness of all things, the law of love eternal." The work of the Theosophical Order of Service is sacred. It is started to provide TS members with a platform to put theosophical concept into action, to make those principles concrete. Can there be anything more sacred? It is right action with love and respect, with compassion between the server and the served. It is her service to the living God within everything. We have had plenty of example of the service as a sacred labor from the leader of the Theosophical Society and Theosophical Order of Service. Our international president, Mrs. Radha Varnia, has been working for the welfare of others for the most of her life. Through her vast hour notes, she directs the attention of the TS and TUS members and leader of the Theosophist to the need of the right action to minimize cruelty, superstition, prejudice, and sufferings of all living beings. But the world is not free from these vices. Despite the amount of work we have done, this is also a part of the sacred labor. No matter how tired we become, how weary is the world will be, maybe, we must not lose sight that our labor is for the higher cause, a greater cause, a sacred cross. As a member of the TS and TUS, a spirit of love, truth and justice, wisdom and goodness, the power we should work together, following the footsteps of our great leaders, to awaken the consciousness of humanity to that sacred labor, which is dedicated service full of love and compassion. I have come from the Lord Nobel laureate Rabindranath Tagore in his book Gitanjali. In her words, "Love is the only reality, and it is just a mere sentiment. It is the ultimate truth that lies at the heart of the creation." He also said, "Where there is a love, there is no I. Where there is a I, there is no love." Brothers and sisters, we are the member of the Theosophical Society and TUS. We have to dedicate our life for the service of the humanity. Thank you. Thank Dinah and thank Tim Bhatt for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Burinda. Very interesting, and thank you for sharing your recollections of compassion in times of deep trouble last century. Our next speaker on service as a sacred labour is Cynthia Tracy. Cynthia grew up in a liberal Unitarian family, one which encouraged freedom of thought and inquiry. She and her husband Atmar married in 1971, and after the birth of their daughter, she took music and singing exams. Cynthia and Atmar both joined the TS in 1986. However, Cynthia studied for and gained a BA degree in social studies before getting down to theosophical studies. Cynthia is president of the Bradford Theosophical Society in Yorkshire, England, and she has been a national lecturer in Britain for over 15 years. She's also joint secretary and coordinator of the TOS in England with her husband, Atmar. Amongst other things, Cynthia practices Iyengar yoga, sings in a choir, and her classical performances are much in demand. I learned from Cynthia that she assists and has a great interest in areas of meditation in prisons, and she's been writing to a prisoner for about 12 years, which I'm sure brings much comfort to the prisoner. She's also taught young children for about 8 years, enjoys gardening, and works in a charity shop for the Samaritans, which she's also been doing for about 15 years. So please give a warm welcome to Cynthia.
Service as sacred labour. When I saw the word labour in the title, my mind immediately dwelt on the labour of giving birth throughout nature. Laboured breathing, the various forced labour camps, child labour, and the labours of Hercules. Sacred labour, that which is divine, dedicated, consecrated, sounds so much sweeter, yet it too involves hard work, suffering, even sacrifice. The path is long and arduous, with many pitfalls. Master KH told us that all our bodies, the subtle as well as the physical, have to be strong and healthy for the journey. We have to have determination and will, like John Bunyan, who wrote, "He who would valiant be against all disaster, let him in constancy follow the master. I'll fear not what men say, I'll labour night and day to be a pilgrim." Now, in the world of mythology, Hercules can be seen as the sun god who passes through the 12 labours, which are linked to the 12 signs of the zodiac. This is indeed service to everything under the sun, for what can we do without it? But as Geoffrey Hodgson writes, the life story of Hercules, or Heracles, as he calls him, may be interpreted as a description of the experiences of every neophyte who successfully treads the path. The labours are a series of penances considered impossible to perform. Each labour allegorically describes an interior task which will help spiritual evolution by gaining victory over and transmuting into power every undesirable quality. The first labour is the killing of the Nemean lion, and the lion represents all the animalistic qualities we acquired in the animal kingdom. They are the least desirable attributes, but the hardest to transform into the opposite spiritual qualities. The fifth labour is the cleaning out of the Augean stables. And Geoffrey Hodgson says, "Look within and evoking the inmost will, wisely, skillfully direct the purifying powers, the fresh and clean river waters of the higher spiritual selfhood into and throughout every thought, feeling and action of the stable of the lower mortal personal nature to cleanse them of all impurities." But the task of self-perfecting is never undertaken by the aspirant for self-gain, but solely for the attainment of greater effectiveness in the service of others. The hero is each one of us, and we should serve both individuals and the whole of humanity. H.P. Blavatsky writes in The Voice of the Silence that to live to benefit mankind is the first step. Goodness me, I thought, that doesn't give me much excuse for leaving service till later. Oh, well, at least I'm a theosophist. And the Master K.H. says, none of you can be so blind as to suppose that this is your first dealing with theosophy. But what is it that H.P.B. wrote in her little book, Practical Occultism? In comparing theosophy and occult science, she states that it is easy to become a theosophist. Any person of average intellectual capacities and a leaning towards a metaphysical of pure, unselfish life, who finds more joy in helping his neighbour than in receiving help himself, one who is ever ready to sacrifice his own pleasures for the sake of other people, and who loves truth, goodness, and wisdom for their own sake, not for the benefit of they may confer, is a theosophist. Gulp! That description makes me feel ashamed that Master K.H. had to say, remember, you are theosophists. It makes me realise that to be a true theosophist is to live a life of service, a life of sacred labour. Annie Besant said that no one really is a thorough member of the society like ours unless he or she has taken up some kind of service to others. The life of the spirit consists in giving continually. You cannot hope that spiritual life shall pour into you from above unless the life you are receiving pours out from you in every direction. The service demanded is that unselfish service that gives everything and asks for nothing in return. Let us look once more at H.P.B.'s beautiful poetry in The Voice of the Silence. Let thy soul, lend its ear to every cry of pain, like as the lotus bears its heart to drink the morning sun. Let not the fierce sun dry one tear of pain before thyself has wiped it from the sufferer's eye. But let each burning human tear drop on thy heart and there remain, nor ever brush it off until the pain that caused it is removed. These tears, O thou heart most merciful, these are the streams that irrigate the fields of charity immortal. Quite a lot is asked of us, it seems, but we have not been left without help. Characters in mythology and fairy tales and great souls who have gone before us all teach by example. A master or adept is one who is a servant to all, seeking no reward. He uses his knowledge to help humanity. And masters show us what is possible, and it gives us encouragement. Clara Codd wrote that, like apprentices, we should study and watch the technique of great souls. As we ourselves advance and create for ourselves new values, we shall the more readily recognise those who are living examples. But Clara warns that there will be stagnation unless the results of our study and meditation are applied in service. Steps along the path are steps in understanding, expressed in action. All life should be our field of service, including the mineral, plant, and animal kingdoms. Our hearts have to be big enough to take everything in. Whatever situation we find ourselves in, it is an opportunity for service. Clara tells us that St. Catherine of Siena prayed that she would be granted the favour of seeing spiritually the beauty of every human soul. She was told that she would need to banish from her heart all anxious thoughts concerning herself and her salvation, so that she was not distracted from service to others, And that is a very tall order. T. Subbarao called this a self-denial which is not time-bound, but must be eternal, and the object of which must be the spiritual enlightenment of the human race. Now that is the highest of all tall orders. And as the British playwright Tom Stoppard wrote, "Eternity is a terrible thought. I mean, where's it all going to end?" Subbarao continues, "So the motive is all important. If you give no space to your own troubles, you have plenty of room for the problems of others. This divine insight is the greatest power of service the occultist can obtain. To such power we should all aspire, being aware that we should want to aid others in their way." Sri Ram reminded us that we cannot be choosy about whom we wish to serve. It is my own experience that it is often the one whom others do not deem worthy of help and friendship, or the person I have to struggle to have patience with, that grants me the honour of friendship through kindness and service. Sri Ram wrote most exquisitely, "When all life becomes a poem of service in the true, pure inward sense, then all life grows exceedingly beautiful. It unfolds like a flower." And so it seems to me that service is sacred labour, and sacred labour is service. I do not have the words to express well what I feel, so I will end with words from Ramana Maharshi. "Correcting oneself is correcting the world. The sun is simply bright. It does not correct anyone. Because it shines, the whole world is full of light. Transforming yourself is a means of giving light to the whole world." Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Cynthia. Some wonderful quotes there, and I didn't tell you what a delightful sense of humour she has. It's wonderful. Now, our next speaker, Dorothy Bell, I think probably needs no introduction, but I will say a few words about old Doro, as we call her down under. Or young Doro. Dorothy joined the society in 1999 after many years of a spiritual journey, which took her to an ashram in northern India with the Brahma Kumaris. Dorothy has an extensive background in training in education, governance, counselling, and her participation in schools of wisdom at Adyar have greatly contributed to her wonderful work in presenting many theosophical programs. She's published articles in Australia, India, New Zealand, and America. Dorothy has contributed significantly to strategic planning in the international TOS. Her enthusiasm lies in making theosophy practical and relevant to daily life by building the bridge between intellectual knowledge and direct experience in the process of self-transformation and service. For me, Dorothy is an example of someone who practices what she preaches, someone who daily puts into action the practices of self-awareness, inner transformation, and loving service for others. In New Zealand, we've adopted Dorothy to our lodge, where she has contributed so much. Dorothy also has a great love of and interest of music, as we saw last night with her wonderful rendition of O Hidden Life to Pastor Bell's Canon. Please give a warm welcome to Dorothy.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you. And namaste. Good morning. I see four issues relating to seeing service as sacred labour. Basically a foundation slab of actual recognition of the divinity and sacredness of our inner nature, the difficulties in its expression, and the choice we have of a path of self-transformation and purification of action, which Annie Besant made quite clear to us in many of her writings. And the last issue I'd like to briefly touch on at the end is the distinctive characteristics of a Theosophical World Server for Diana. There are two quotes that I will throw in at the beginning and maybe revisit at the end. Annie Besant in the book Initiation said, "We have to earn the right to be a world server. We have to earn the right to be a world server." And in a recent book by Robert Sandello, an American, the book titled Freeing the Soul from Fear, he said, "We cannot really help in the service of all that suffers until we are free of fear." Two very challenging statements. So let's just revisit some of the fundamental propositions from the wisdom about our birthright. As I see it, service as sacred labour is the work of the sacred from within us. It's spontaneous expression when we allow. We are part of the one life, the living but hidden reality that underlies our existence on earth. As I've said earlier, we are divine seeds. We've never been born and we will never die. But we are experiencing a temporary time zone in which to grow that seed. We are each a unit of divine consciousness, a living consciousness, but we're individualized and localized. We are each spiritual entities, if you like, in human vehicles. And as HPB described, we are pilgrim souls on a great journey. We are soul actors on the temporary world stage, the Shakespearean stage, playing new roles in different personalities each time around, or each time we come into the physical plane. Purpose is to learn and to grow into the living power of the sacred way. So we are indeed wondrous beings waiting to express fully through a powerful gift, the mind, which can control and limit us to the personality, ego, or it can be the centre of divine operation, the instrument of our inner true selves. And these are our real shoes. We have a right to be on the planet, each one of us, how many billion? Nearly seven. And to achieve our spiritual potential here. And HPB expresses this so clearly. The essence of Theosophy is the perfect harmonizing of the divine with the human in man. In the context of the theme then, service as sacred labor, service action as spontaneous outward expression of our inner sacred spiritual nature, it does not come from the mind of the conditioning, the conditioned patterns from birth of the personalities, nor does it come from the emotional projections that when we project our image upon the world. In this sense, this spontaneous projection from the heart center is entirely selfless. It is from the sacred within, operating from true compassion, which is a detached but interconnected, a paradox, a detached emotional state, an unemotional state of being, where the artificial personality is actually subjugated to a higher end, to a higher end. That's the nature of sacrifice. It's subjugated to a higher end, to the higher desire of the soul, the impulse of the soul, to see and serve the divine in everything, through the individuals that come across the path. Love, then, is a form of seeing, as Annie Besant proposed, the action of seeing through outer appearances to the truth of the hidden reality within, and to see the absolute beauty of that truth in whoever is before us. In this context, sacred labour is when the wholeness and perfection of who we already are within is expressed outwards to the whole. In this, there's the union. This is the union. This is the unity. There is harmony in being one with the oneness. So from seeing the unity and the interconnectedness comes the harmony, which then allows the expression of true and detached love compassion. And this is the living power of theosophy. I see no difference between the purpose of the TS and the TOS, the living power of theosophy. It reflects also the motto of the TS, to form a union of those who love in the service of all that suffers. The second point, if we feel our inner divinity, why can't we just be it and just do it? Possible reasons: we may not really believe it or strongly enough. The strength of our beliefs determine if we act upon them, so say the psychologists. Or we're happy to leave it and be comfortable with it as an intellectual idea. Or we don't know how to get from here where we are now to that state of being. Or we're not convinced that the mind is really the slayer of the real. But whatever our position, it is accurate. It is perfect. Not right or wrong. Good or bad, it just is. So we have choice, which is the third point, of whether or not to pursue the notion that our personality has been programmed into us with our emotions. It's a pretty big task, isn't it? That our minds have been hardwired by beliefs and values and attitudes and emotions that are alien to our true nature. And that from the moment we are born or before, we are programmed away from being who we truly are and live to the expectations of others. And we may not like the view of Krishnamurti that we are second-hand people. We may not like that. Nor that we are blinded by form and that we are hobbled or attached emotionally to accumulated beliefs which dominate our thoughts and actions. So there is choice. There's also some considered, I won't say reactions, but factors there that are very real. Another obstacle to recognise, of course, is that we have been programmed in our perceptions and attitudes to service. As children growing up in the family, in the schools, and in the church. And during the two workshops, I want to thank all who participated in relating stories about how they were trained in various service activities at home and at school in competition for house points, and how this did form shape and attitudes to service. For example, we may have learnt that social service, that was called in my primary school and the high school and the Catholic school where I went, was very strong, but it was tied to doing things and achieving and competing. That it was also the right thing to do. It's the right thing. And if it's important to you to do the right thing and be validated in so doing, then this is a very important aspect of service. It's important to our emotional needs, perhaps, to be seen to be doing the right thing. And this came from childhood. To care and help others and to share is the right thing. And we may also have learnt that this is rewarded with approval or acceptance or recognition or status or winning the house cup at high school. Because this is how the school, where I went to school, the social service was a cup that was presented to the winning house. So that had a bearing on service, perceptions of service. We also may have learnt that it was wrong to have abundance, to feel guilt in our good fortune, in the face of those less fortunate, those disadvantaged, those diseased without medical help, those who are victims of injustice throughout the world, even in our own society. In this way of thinking, what emotions can arise? Pity, sorrow, guilt. And we help maybe from an unconscious position of superiority or compensation, of feeling sorry. This childhood training or influence on us usually produces a mixed bag of motives, self-serving as well as genuine caring. And Annie Besant recognised these mixed motives on the path of service, which she called the path of purification of action. And she identified three phases along this path. Firstly, self-gratification. You do it for personal ego means, consciously or unconsciously. Then the second phase was a mix of meeting the needs of the personality ego and having the genuine caring. And she uses the term service as duty. And in this phase, a genuine sense of other develops. And she said this phase, and she asks us to perhaps throughout our whole life, she said these two factors operate. They do. But throughout our life on the path of service, we may aim to have that genuineness and the caring for others overtake the other one. Until we arrive at the third phase, which she called service as joyful sacrifice. And this is where I think she would propose that we aligned with the sacred within. And this is the stage where we truly subjugate the personality ego in so doing, and that's the notion of sacrifice, because for a higher purpose. And the word crucifixion comes into this too, and the image of the symbol of the Christian symbol of the cross, the crucifixion of the lower nature and the symbolism therein. So the path of transformation through service action, karma yoga, should we take it, may be seen as the journey from egoism to altruism. But Annie Besant pointed out even altruism has a sense of other. There is still that sense of division. And so ultimately, in alignment with total alignment with the sacredness of who we are within, that oneness, the self would disappear, I'm projecting. So we come to... No, we don't come to that yet. Service as sacred labour is a summary statement here that results from unveiling our eyes, peeling back the scales, an unveiled spiritual perception of the bigger picture of our reality and making that the reality. That's where we stand. We stand in the shoes of the eternal self. As Annie Besant suggested, we wake up each morning to reprogram our minds with the saying, I am the changeless self. I am the changeless self. So you greet the world from that point of view. So seeing this bigger picture gives us an understanding of a total new scene, a format for our behaviour, an understanding of universal laws and who we are on an evolutionary journey, where we've come from, where we're going, where we are destined to be, and ultimately the purpose of our life and our temporary sojourns on this planet. And the planet is the great schoolhouse of learning. That's what it is. In this context, then, the divine plan of evolution, we can learn to see with the eyes of the divine wisdom, the eyes of the wisdom, to change our perceptions of service. And in particular, we can learn to see those in need of a helping hand in this new light. So to the fourth point, it's not that we change anything we do in service. This is nothing to do with changing anything we do. It's not what we do. But maybe we see it a little differently with the eyes of the divine wisdom. We may see it as the living power of theosophy, To exemplify this, let's think of two new world servers, two people who are coming along in the TS. Let's think of a young man and a young woman. The young man's name's called Theo and the woman's name's called Sophie. And what would characterise Theo and Sophie, who were working to see service through theosophical eyes? They would work daily to see the divine in everything, to see the divine in everything and everyone, to see through the outer appearances to the beauty of this hidden sacred reality of the interconnected whole. They'd come to see everything as energy, go beyond form, go beyond form. They would learn to see others. They'd learn to see through form, see others as programmed minds, really. Change perceptions. They would work towards understanding how they, in fact, had been programmed themselves. So this is self-study. It may also be self-study of our parents, if they still be on the planet. And to look at the illusion of separateness, of how it is promulgated each day, looking at the news broadcasts on television each night and testing themselves whether they can see through what's going on there, the play of the world stage as it operates. Okay, seeing through what's happening. But it is a world stage for a purpose. They would work to see the illusion of separateness, to look at themselves in a new light, because we are very self-critical and self-judgmental human beings. To learn to see themselves in a new light is so very important. How can you learn to see others in a new light if you can't see yourself in a new light? Another word, forgiveness, is a popular one, but forgiveness stems from kind of judgment. But I will say this, we have to learn to forgive ourselves by just accepting ourselves, our past actions. We could do no other than what we did. And Eckhart Tolle, or Tolle, is very strong on this. He's one of the New Age gurus. As a matter of fact, he's very, very similar in his principles. But if we can forgive ourselves for what we have done in the past, and forgive ourselves from carrying it into now, to understand ourselves that we could do no other because our programming was such that our choices were limited. We did not understand who we are, who we were, or the purpose of our life. We didn't have the bigger picture. But theosophy gives us the opportunity to expand consciousness. Notice I'm not going up there. I'm going out here for a start to expand our consciousness and awareness of a much bigger picture. Back to Sophie and Theo. Let us talk. I've been talking about judgment and accepting everyone as how they are, and knowing that everyone we see, like ourselves, is a result of numerous lifetimes of learning, of journeying to the planet. Such is the diversity. Such is the diversity, levels and dimensions of our consciousness. And they would recognise that everyone on the planet suffers in one way or another. We can use Maslow here. Suffers physically, emotionally, intellectually, even spiritually. Right? So everyone suffers. The Buddha made this quite clear. And suffering is an integral part of growth. Pain and suffering is an integral part of growth. Sophie and Theo, tagging along, would also work to understand that each person on the planet is in the right place for the right time for the right reasons, according to the educational agenda of the soul and the expression of the great universal law of karma, perfect divine justice. And this would in no way affect the offering of their helping hands to those in need. Remember, we don't change what we do in service. We just see it in a different light. And we see those we serve in a different light. Sophie and Theo would come to see that the so-called injustice in the world did not take into account the whole life and journey of the soul and all its former lives, and the soul's agenda for this lifetime in relation to other lifetimes, future lifetimes, which we may already have completed. that in natural or divine law, everything is accurate, not right or wrong, good or bad, just or unjust. That's a real challenge, that one. The law of karma is the most magnificent and perfect educational and compassionate tool. These two would come to see that there were no victims. That's a challenge. And there were no blessed favourites, if you like. No one, from Bowen's notes, no one is greater or lesser in God's economy. No one is greater or lesser in the bigger picture. There are only causes and consequences to experience and to understand. And they would acknowledge, and this came out of the workshop yesterday, that we all have created our world from past lives. This world, which we may look at in terms of great sorrow, or look at it, however we look at it, we have produced it, and we are producing it now in how we are. The outer is reflection of the inner. And this, of course, echoes Krishnamurti's principle. We need to experience the consequences of what we have created in past lives, in our personal life, and in the world at large. Call it the collective consciousness, whatever. And whatever social action that Theo and Sophie take, they would work towards not being invested in the outcomes of their action. And the great hymn to action of the Bhagavad Gita is a wonderful dissertation on action. And they would not be invested in the outcome of their action. So here, intentions and motives are brought to the reality in forefront again. This would be right action. This is harmonious action. They would become eventually selfless. And the word is passively active, another paradox, passively active in service. The hallmark of altruism, embodying the detachment from which true compassion is expressed. Above all, they would come to see pain and suffering in a new light, as serving the needs of the soul to learn and grow, a sacred process, involving perhaps the crucifixion of the lower self. They would develop, us world server then would develop such a deep respect for the soul entity that they were serving, the soul entity and the service and the experience and the situation that that soul has chosen for this lifetime. They would witness in this not only respect, but they would witness the awesomeness of the divine plan in operation before their very eyes. And see, ultimately, how it was an honour to serve in this context. It was an honour, this sacred context. So this is how I see service as sacred labour, as moving away from service as pity or being sorry for or compensatory guilt, away from these emotional projections of the personality, to learning to see with distinctive theosophical eyes of respect for the sufferer, no matter what the outside vehicle is displaying, no matter what the outside vehicle looks like, respect for the sufferer and feeling then honoured to help another in the situation. But you're serving the whole. And it reminds me of that little unclear saying of the Christ teachings. What you do to the least of my brethren, you do unto me. Thank you. Yeah. But to honour the journey and the situations that another soul has chosen for the learning, for a higher cause, for the great cause. And this is the great work, is it not? So this is service for the sacred. It's actually service from the sacred within when we allow it. Service to the sacred in another, and service to the whole, to the one life. So let's revisit those two quotes, perhaps what we've said here has shed some light on the two quotations. We have to earn the right to be a world server. And I guess this would be when we come to learn to honour, change our way of perception of service. And then Robert Sardello saying, we cannot really help in the service of all that suffers until we are free of fear. Shanti. Mm.